Good morning and welcome to the roundtable and to our paddle.
You're beyond compare.
It's just one of those moments when you hear a fragment of a conversation just as the microphone opens. I apologize for my giggling. Okay. Good morning and welcome to our panel for this Monday, the 31st of March, the last day of March, last day of the first quarter, if you will. In this hour, we start off with our open discussion of issues. Let us introduce the panel to you. Joining us for the discussion, WAMC's Alan Chartok, who is seating himself right now. Good morning, Alan.
Delighted, I'm sure.
Yes, I'm sure. I'm delighted. University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo.
Good morning. Hello.
And the ever-brilliant political consultant, Libby Vost.
Yay, Libby.
Yeah.
You can join us by emailing roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also comment on our webpage or Facebook page or by tweeting us at WAMC Roundtable, at WAMC Roundtable. Thank you all for being here. Hope you had a good weekend. Very nice to have you aboard. So there's a lot of places that we can begin. However, let us begin with this, which is the U.S.-Russia meetings and the fact that John Kerry and his counterpart in Russia failed to reach a deal over the Ukraine, but say that they will keep talking. I guess we could go into some of the details, and we will in a second, but I guess it's safe to say that do we really expect much to be diffused on this, do you think, Rosemary?
Well, it was hopeful. The Russians called us and said, hey, let's talk, considering they have a number that's varied from what I've seen between 40 and 100,000 men on the border of eastern Ukraine. It seemed like a good idea. Maybe he's backing down. I don't know what exactly he's looking for. The publications didn't tell us the substance of the discussions. So I always think it's good when we're talking.
He's a tricky son of a gun, you know.
Who's that, Kerry or Putin?
No, I don't think we're nearly as tricky or as good at this as he is. Dictators have an advantage. They always do, in the short run anyway. And I think his the idea was to show everybody in the world that, you know, he was interested in talking to us. But he, on several occasions, he's been able to sucker us, you know, by saying they have no intentions of going anywhere. So, oh, by the way, we want the Russian speakers in all the other places in, you know, in Ukraine to have plebiscites or to make decisions on their own as to where they should be. You know, it's quite clear. By the way, you all notice that he doesn't talk at all about returning.
No. That's off the table.
That's not part of the plan.
That's a done deal. So now what he's doing is moving the negotiation to other things.
I thought the comment by John Kerry made a lot of sense, which is the troops are in Russia. They're on Russian soil. The question is not one of right or legality. The question is one of strategic appropriateness. And whether it is smart at this moment in time to have that number of troops massed on the border when you're trying to send a message that you want to de-escalate. And that kind of crystallizes the whole issue, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think Putin is toying with us.
I think he wants to see how far we'll go. But I also think that he... Yeah, and we've talked about this.
Do you think we know how far we'll go?
No, I don't, and that's part of the problem. But, you know, this is part of his manifest destiny perspective about Russia and the need to reclaim all the motherland, the fatherland, and every other land that he can get his hands on.
Right, Libby, this is the guy who was on record as saying one of the worst things that ever happened was the dissolution of the Soviet Union.
Right,
he was the head KGB man.
Right, but he wants to go back to the geographic, but not the political. He wants to be the czar.
It's interesting, because you read any American history book and you see the concept of manifest destiny, is lauded.
Mm-hmm. Except when somebody else does it.
Except when it's the Russian dictator.
Right.
I think he's framing it in terms of this is what the people want. It was a vote in Crimea, for example. Yes. There are many Russian people and pro-Russian people in the other communities and countries that he's looking at. I think he's trying to make a stand for how legitimate his position is.
Yeah, you know, you have a point, and I don't think that by any means this is cut and dried either way.
Nope.
I really don't.
And where do we stand on further talks, do you think?
We should always talk.
Yeah, I think we have to keep talking, but we have to keep talking. The thing is that are we going to be talking with people who will actually live up to their promises, or are we going to be just talking to ourselves and getting empty promises back and just, you know, just to keep on talking while he keeps on merrily doing whatever it is he wants to do? Mm-hmm. You know, I know people don't like to make, or at least last week, people took offense at making saying that he was like Hitler in terms of what Hitler did in 1939. But it's really, you know, pretty close. He's being very aggressive. And, you know, there was a non-aggression pact in 1939, and then Poland got annexed. And so I don't trust this guy, and I think that he will continue to expand his footprint as long as he can without anybody. And who's going to... He knows if there's war, it's going to be World War III, and we can all say goodbye.
Well, that's right. And he won't allow it to go to World War III. The question is, do we have to pretend?
Right. Can we rattle our sabers loud enough?
Do we have to get in his face and put no-fly zones up and put jets in the air? I don't want to do that. And that's where mistakes are made. I would remind you all that World War I came that terrible, terrible war.
I think he's slicing and dicing Ukraine. What's happening right now is the Ukrainian government is being formed, and the United States will have a lot of influence on that. And he wants something like a loose federation where each area will have a lot of autonomy. That gives him a lot of push in certain areas, particularly in the east and in the along the southeast, up just above Crimea, with a country that has a lot of control in the local regions. That gives Russia a lot of control over Ukraine. The United States can help him get that. I think that's what he's really pushing for here.
We should remember how it all began, which is you had a president who was all ready to sign with the West, sign on the dotted line, and somebody whispered in his ear, probably Putin, probably knowing that this guy had a lot that he had to protect, and said, "You got to change your mind, otherwise." And that goes on to this moment.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will continue and talk about other issues. We welcome your comments, as always. Roundtable@WAMC.org. Roundtable@WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Libby Post, and Rosemary Armeo, you can join the discussion as well. We will continue after this short break.
Support comes from Ward's Nursery and Garden Center, Great Barrington, featuring primrose seeds, soils, pansies, orchids, houseplants, and eclectic gardening gear, 413-528-0166. The Brattleboro Retreat, helping people with mental health and addiction problems to make new starts, brattlebororetreat.org. And the Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs, celebrating 30 years of educating children and striving to inspire a lifelong love of learning, waldorfsaratoga.org.
Welcome back to our roundtable discussion. In a 45-minute conference call with reporters, Governor Andrew Cuomo said his Moreland Commission panel on public corruption will be mothballed if the state legislature approves the ethics reform components included in the just-struck $138 billion budget deal. Cuomo said the panel had helped bring legislative leaders to the point where they'd agree to the package of reforms, which creates an independent enforcement unit within the State Board of Elections, new public corruption felonies, and tougher bribery laws, and steps up lobbying disclosure. Cuomo told reporters, if this package is adopted, then I would end the Moreland Commission.
Well, why would you do that? In other words, he appointed this thing called the Moreland Act Commission to go after corruption. They were sending out subpoenas. The state legislature didn't like those subpoenas. They didn't want to respond. Does anybody want to guess why they didn't want to respond? They didn't want to respond because they had things to hide. So they come up with these lukewarm, tepid changes in the ethics law. Instead of the two to two, forever, the Republicans versus the Democrats on the Board of Elections so nothing could get done, they say, okay, we're going to have a tiebreaker vote over here. And if you think that that tiebreaker vote is going to be, Wyatt Earp, forget it. It ain't. Then they say, we're going to change the amount of money you got to tell us about. I forget what it was, but it goes down to something like $100,000. No, tell us what you are getting from lobbyists and from people who want to influence you. Don't tell us between $50,000 and $100,000. Don't tell us between zero and $100,000. Tell us the amount. Who do you think you are? Now, wait a second. If the governor is putting out this thing and say, who is, by the way, the governor is just a strategic genius. He wins like crazy on this budget. But because most people don't know a thing about state government, and as a result, if he says that they won, they won. But they didn't win. You had a Moreland Act Commission filled with district attorneys, all of whom wanted to get stuff. They sent out subpoenas, or as our friend Ken Lovett of the Daily News put it, they sent out subpoenas until the governor's people told them not to send out subpoenas to the people who had given him money for his $32 million in his campaign account. And that's another thing. $32 million. $32 million or $30 million in a campaign account, and you are for and you say you are for a public financing of elections. Wait a second now. How could it be you're for public and you don't get these guys to go along? Oh, the Senate Republicans wouldn't go along. Are you kidding? The only reason the Senate Republicans are there is because you allowed them to be there, Governor.
Oh,
you know.
Wound you right up. Yeah.
Wow.
Great.
You said, can you handle this, Emily?
Yes, and you did.
And it's still
my
going.
God, it was like you were, I'm sorry.
So the answer really is that this governor, if he wanted campaign financing for everybody, but who does he give it to? He gives it to his political enemy, Tom DiNapoli, who he doesn't like. And, of course, it means that DiNapoli may have raised $1 million compared to his 32, and he won't be able to use it because he's putting he's making a test case out of the one guy he doesn't like in the state government. Will you please give me a break? Prince of Darkness, indeed.
Okay, I think we can move right on now.
Just to let that be the final word.
I'm just surprised he didn't do the AG and the controller's race.
Oh, but he did get the AG.
I know
AG.
He did because he can't take the money from, was it JP
Morgan?
No,
he got the AG. He got the AG won a concession from...
Yeah, but he won't have control over it now.
And then he was fighting with Cuomo. Cuomo put it in the budget. The interesting thing here is that the speaker, Shelley Silver, seems to be going along with all of these governor things. And the speaker is sitting in somewhat of a hot seat himself right now.
Yeah.
What's that? What's that noise? Anyway.
It's somebody's phone.
Oh.
It may be
yours. Oh, yeah, there it is. Oh,
look
there
at
it is.
That.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Mine. Okay.
It's your phone.
Yeah. So, okay. So he gets in the... So the speaker goes along and says, anything you want, governor. Now, what's going on in the speaker's life? Well, things are a little tough right now. Should I just burn everything that I have in the way? But things are a little tough. Let's just put it this way, that way. And there are a number of investigations going on. And I think that the speaker is giving to the governor whatever he wants.
So if I have this right from just listening to what you just said and from what I understand about this from the Moreland Commission, So you say, okay, we're going to mothball it because we have legislation that's going to cover it, even though, as you use the word tepid, even though what was coming out of that commission was somewhat tepid. So we will just take the...
They never gave a chance for anything to come out of the commission.
We'll say the tepidity then goes into the legislation. But why then couldn't you have both? And I guess the answer is you don't want to have both because they wouldn't let anything come out of it anyway.
Joe, let me put it this way. If you are getting $32 million or $30 million, and a lot of it is coming from the real estate industry and the people who are really rich in New York State, and all of a sudden you're subpoenaing those people, and the word comes down, if Ken Lovett is right, don't do that, then there are some things that people don't want out there. So therefore, put the Moreland Act report saying we should have fair campaign financing and all the rest of it onto the shelf and let it collect dust along with all the others. It's disgusting.
It's the same old, same old.
It is.
People who are outside of power want campaign finance. They want reform. Once they get into power, they don't want those reforms anymore because they realize it will challenge their power.
And by the way, it's a brilliant observation,
oh,
Libby.
Oh, thank you
and
so
I'm gonna
much,
And I'm going to tell
Alex.
You why. Because supposedly the governor is for it. Supposedly the assembly is for it.
Yeah, yeah.
Supposedly, Jeff Klein is for it.
Then put the cards on the table and...
But you know what? If I'm in the assembly, do I want people to be able to run against me? I got there the old way by collecting the money.
That's right.
So it's never going to change. After all the cards are shuffled, after everything's on the table... the fact of it is, you don't get it. Why not? Could this governor, okay, let me put it right out. Could this governor have achieved campaign financing for everyone, not just for the controller? Yes, he could have. How? He goes to Jeff Klein and he says to Jeff Klein, you and your four Democrats who are keeping the Republicans in power, you're not going to be there. I'm going to run campaigns against you and get Democrats into the legislature, and that will be the end of that. He goes to Shelley Silver and says, Shelley, come on, give me everything else you want here. Okay. And he goes to Klein and says, Klein, Skelos, the head of the Republicans, the only reason you're here, Skelos, is because I've kept you here. And now I'm going to pull the rug right out from under you unless you give campaign finance. And you know what? He'll do it. He would have to do it. So don't tell me that Shelley Silver, is for it, because if he was for it, you'd have it. And the governor.
I didn't say that.
No, I'm just...
Oh, okay.
Rhetorical.
Just the rhetorical you. Okay, fine.
So there'll be guys in black suits out in front of this place.
So in the end, what did we get out of the... really no surprises then in the budget?
No, he wins. He wins big time.
Yeah, and he's further squeezing local government with this... with this tax cap, more tax cap thing, which is going to, you know, I don't understand what they think they're going to accomplish.
He's a classic Republican. Yeah,
it really is. I mean, you know, on some levels, you know, gay rights and blah, 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 that's great social issues. But when it comes to socioeconomic issues, when it comes to whether or not he should take the Koch brothers' money, he takes the Koch brothers' money. When you take that money, you take the politics with you, and you see it being played out in a lot of different
things.
Lead
editorial in the New York Post praising him this morning.
Yeah, right.
What do you think that tells you?
Wow.
That's right. That's right. I mean, you know, so it's like, and this tax cap thing, whatever the next thing about consolidate and then we'll give you, let you tax more, whatever it is, it's squeezing local government and it's making the provision of basic services so much more difficult, and all it's hurting are the people who live in the poorer communities, in the more financially stressed communities, and it's just not fair. And you know, the notion that government is supposed to be sort of an equalizer and take care of those without is going to the wayside now, and we're just going to see more and more local governments caving.
Especially when you heard the governor so much talking about the importance of strengthening upstate.
Right. This is not strengthening. I just woke up in Utica middle of the week because I spoke up there. And that community needs help. It doesn't need to be squeezed.
Yes. And look, when I call the governor a strategic genius, I mean he is a strategic genius.
Yes.
Because the whole idea is to win elections.
Right.
But when it comes to policy that helps everybody, he's got problems, real problems in terms of the people on the left who are beginning to get it.
You know, and people will go, oh, well, Utica, well, the nanotech's going into Rome, and there'll be a trickle-down effect. But that's what his economic policies are. It's all trickle-down. And we know what that really means.
Hey, hey, hey.
And one other thing.
I sort of want to end on it.
One other thing, charter schools.
Right.
Into all of this, the governor stands up, remembering that the people who support charter schools, many of the people, very good people, who decide that, you know, something has to be done about education, so they give millions of dollars to charter schools of their choice. They get named with them, and they're affiliated with them. And these are the very people who are putting some of that $32 million into the bank.
Right? Which is why you hit the streets with them and lock arms with them and say you're in solidarity, right? Mm-hmm. As a governor.
Well, I think that's part of it. You know, there are good things about charter schools, and there are really bad things, too.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll get to your letters. There are several of them. We'll get to those. Plus, we'll move on to many other topics as well. We'll give everyone a moment to contemplate what we've just talked about. And you can write roundtable@wamc.org. We'll be back after the short break. Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable discussion and our panel this morning. It is very nice to have you with us. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Libby Post are our guests this morning, and we thank you very much for being a part of the conversation. And you can write to us, roundtable@wamc.org, and we'd love to read your comments like this one.
Oh, like this one from Pat, who says, by squeezing local government, Cuomo will also be pushing his effort to make local governments consolidate services. That's about the good Cuomo who is taking the money away from the people who need it the most in order to make localities consolidate services. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then from Michael, who says, you can hear Alan's passion about the New York governorship. Reminds me of me and Mario from years ago. And here's from John, Alan, Libby, etc. Right now, brilliant. Right on. Right on.
Rosemary and I are etc.
You're the guys who are the E and the T of etc. Right on. Brilliant observations. I hope WFP has the courage to pull endorsement of governor this year. That's the Working Families Party. Right. He is not a progressive, but he is a genius. John, he is a genius. No question about it. Strategic genius. And Matt Mann says, take Alan's coffee cup, please.
little Henny Youngman there. That's
yeah,
good.
Right. Yeah. Please. Okay. Yeah. That's good. And then Walker says we can spend forever trying to figure out what Putin is thinking, but we presume that he is as balanced and mentally healthy as we are. His actions now and over the years seem to fall into the narcissism associative personality disorder categories. Isn't it a waste of time trying to get into his head? Maybe more time can be spent examining each EU country's positions. And that's from Walker. My response to that would be, no, you really have to know where a guy is coming from in order to posit your own position, figure out what your own position is. You just can't assume. We spend a lot of time on that. Oh, Joe, do you have one?
No.
Tony, you're not
Tony. Oh, yeah, Tony. Right. Most voters don't know how much it costs to shortchange paying for government. They need $50 million to pay for people if the annual budget is $5 billion, is just 1%. The budget is larger than that. By pretending lawmakers are part-timers, we allow their outside law clients have outsized influence over government. As Port Authority's David Sampson's conflicted decisions to benefit clients have proved, make lawmakers full-time and secure lifetime income, but term limit their office and prohibit outside work.
And he got his hair cut off this way,
oh,
this very weekend.
God.
Sampson,
what,
get
what
it?
I got it.
Okay.
Yeah. What a horrible way to end
a 74-year-old career.
A good public servant career. I mean, I knew of him from the hospital commission.
Yeah.
And I thought he did a good job, and he was thoughtful, and and even listen to folks who wanted to bring primary care into the discussion. And to get caught up in this, I thought was really a shame.
You know, you make a great point. You really do. No, you do, because you take people like Alan Hevesy.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, he goes to jail, you know,
right.
for selling out his office. But in fact, I knew him very well. He was a great guy.
He was a good guy.
And he did very important work, and then he makes a mistake. And believe me, in this business, you make a mistake and you're vulnerable.
Yeah, you're done.
Yeah.
If you're on the wrong side of certain people with power.
Oh, of
because
that.
Because there are a lot of people who have made mistakes, and those mistakes just keep getting pushed aside, and
sure.
they keep going.
Sure, you're absolutely right.
Let's just go on to other issues. And again, we welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org. Many of the Republican Party's, this from the Washington Post, many of the Republican Party's most powerful insiders, a lot of alliteration there, financiers have begun a behind-the-scenes campaign to draft former Florida Governor Jeb Bush into the 2016 presidential race, courting him and his intimates and starting talks on fundraising strategy. Concerned that the George Washington Bridge traffic scandal has damaged New Jersey Governor Chris Christie's political standing and alarmed by the steady rise of Senator Rand Paul, prominent donors, conservative leaders, and longtime operatives say they consider Bush the GOP's brightest hope to win back the White House. I leave it to you to discuss.
Well, there are three of us sitting on opposite you here around the round table, and we're all nodding our heads.
He's their only hope.
I'm not saying, well, I don't know whether he's the only one, because you never know who in the end gets it. But we had two presidents named Bush. They were there for three terms, two for one and one for
one
the
for
other.
Two, right.
Yeah. But the one thing, Jeb Bush has always been an enigma. He's nobody quite knows why he didn't go for the enchilada. He was the chosen one. W went instead. There has always been, you know, people who keep shrugging their shoulders and say, why not? It makes great sense for, you know, if he has no issues for them to put Bush up. Because, they know Bush's win in this country.
I was one of his subjects. I was a resident of Florida when he was the governor there.
You were a subject.
I was one of his subjects. And I was frankly surprised that he was not recruited during the last presidential election when Republicans were up there in those horrible primaries slugging at each other, slashing and burning. And they ended up with Mitt Romney, a very, at that point, damaged character. And Jeb has none of that. Jeb is not...
You know this how Jeb has none of this?
I know, because I watched him. I covered him for
several
years.
I get
years.
It, but I'm simply saying he always has one, two, three. He runs up, and like Roadrunner, he comes to the finish line and goes, screech! Maybe not this time.
He's not a fool. He's not a George Bush. He is a wonk.
That's correct.
He is a wonk. He's much more Clintonian in his manner than Bush-like.
He has a Hispanic family.
He has a Colombian wife. That's a real reason he didn't run, that you can put that into why it's because she doesn't like it. She likes being on the sideline, and he has a capacity to earn money, which she likes to spend. He has a daughter with a terrible drug problem that has been difficult
to control.
That may be the one. So there have been reasons for him to stay out. He has some negatives if he were going to run. I think Terry Schiavo, the way he handled that, and he was very much in charge of that, is abhorrent to many people, you know, that he had the government interfere in that basic family private decision about whether to shut off health care to a dying woman, to a brain dead woman. But he is sincere. He's smart. He is an attractive character. He has got more right than wrong positions in dicey areas for the Republican Party, such as immigration.
So here's what.
He is an immensely attractive character, and we should not. I think that whole idea of always Bush, no one will vote for him. The name thing is, we got Clinton running. Clinton's kind of a name with a history, too.
No, that would be some
election. That would be quite the matchup.
That would be some election. And I really respect what you're saying, Rosemary. But then comes the strategy of it. If you're going to do it, and if he decides to do it, then what he's got to do is pull a Robert Redford in the candidate. You'll remember that the campaign manager says to him, Okay, so tell me everything that might be used against you, and we're going to go have a press conference, and right now, from minute one, we're going to say it. And then 2 weeks later, when somebody else raises it, we're going to say, oh, no, that's all old stuff. We've told you about all of that.
I think that's another positive for Jeb Bush. We know most of the negatives. I doubt that he spent the last year since he's been out of office in Florida as a businessman, and he's raised a lot of money. That certainly didn't hurt, for example, Mitt Romney when he was running. We know about the skeletons in his closet.
In the Washington Post, in the article this morning, they said that he would have serious
vulnerabilities.
Thank you very much. Weaknesses okay. as a candidate. Good Lord. Out of public office for 7 years, he has struggled in some appearances and has had difficulty navigating the Republican Party's fault lines in immigration and other issues. And
which is why he did what Rosemary just
right.
said. Yeah. In other words, mm-hmm. he was keeping his options open by correct. Saying to the Bible Belt, if that's the right word for this, you know, I'm with you.
Yeah, and he can't.
The Bushes, I mean, that's George and his brother Jeb, are pro-immigration. They are far to the left of the rest of the Republican Party on this. They believe in it. It's actually one of the good things about them.
Well, when they say, I understand that their vulnerabilities show off, but are they serious? And I don't know. I mean, the fact that he hasn't been around for 7 years, he certainly hasn't been out of the news. People still know his name.
Exactly. Oh, no, they right. know his name, and they know he's a Bush.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think that the Bible Belt can get you elected president. I think that we've seen that the last couple of times. And he has the ability of doing some crossover, bringing in some Hispanic vote, being right on the immigration. And I think he's the only one who could beat, if it's Hillary Clinton and him, he's the only one who could at least mount a decent campaign and be able to build more of a rainbow coalition, as it were, within the Republican Party and right. bring some of the moderates and independents over. Otherwise, there really isn't anybody. I think Christie's dead in the water. What are they going to do? Go to with Rick Perry or Marco Rubio or some of these ultra-right wing guys who will alienate the independent vote and alienate...
I will agree, Libby. I thought this in the last election. Yeah. I see it now. I don't see a candidate on the Republican side as strong as they're not.
Well, the establishment... Joe referred to when he set this all up. The big guys with the big money, they're the ones who want Bush.
Right.
Because they don't want the nutty stuff.
That's right.
Rand Paul is looking like the best Republican at
That's
this
amazing.
Point.
Isn't that amazing?
Just amazing.
Last time out, the polls in my classes with liberal kids, they were praising the polls, father and son.
He frequently says,
"I agree."
Yeah, he frequently says things that, like, "Wow, okay, that makes sense."
Yeah,
but he has no experience. He's not a good, I think, presidential candidate in the way that Jeb Bush has. Not just ability and experience; he has that Bush. Machinery. There's
he can act
money
presidential.
There. There's, yeah, there's,
the thing is,
there's
he knows how to act presidential.
Yeah.
You know, Rand Paul, they don't know how to do it. They
he's
just don't get it.
He's got the clout.
Right. He's got the clout. He's got the family name. You know, his father is loved. Despite what he might have done, his father is still a beloved figure in the United States. His brother will not get involved in the campaign if he runs. And it'll be formidable because there'll be a lot of money.
His brother would get involved in the campaign if at any given moment it behooves him to get him involved.
It's the beer drinking.
I'm going to hesitate. Right. I hesitate to bring this up just because I don't know if it's just me or Uh-oh. Something that I've noticed. But I over the last couple of days, I've gotten inundated with, because of what we do here at the station, among all the mailing lists from all the candidates, and you get all the stuff both the Republicans and Democrats and everything.
It's the last minute. We have to get more money passed.
Well, that's right. Yeah. But my God, the Democratic Party over the last weekend of trying to get money into this quarter, it seems to me the tone has been one of just complete desperation.
Yeah, somebody...
It is, you know, a crushing blow. You know, we are...
we're behind.
We're behind. Right. This is horrible. You know, this is going to happen. And I've really been struck by... they do not seem to be saying, okay, well, this is the reason, this is what we need to do, this is why this is so important. The thing is like, we're already defeated.
Guess what? It works.
Yeah.
You think so?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because I look at it and think to myself, wow.
I got one from President Obama just the other day. He wrote to me personally.
It's very nice. And it's Barack.
I remember is when my mother was alive before she passed years and years ago, she said to me one day, I just got a wonderful letter from Jacob Javits. And I said, Mom, you didn't get a letter because I had worked in Congress. There are things called robo-machines.
Right.
And they sign his name. And she was furious with me.
She
was invested in the fact
Don't
that Jacob Javits
bubble.
Had sent her a letter.
A friend of mine on Facebook who's politically active said the same thing, Joe. It's like, what's wrong here? Everything's Armageddon from the Democrats.
Funny. While I was reading this, it works.
It shores up the base. You know, that it works for the diehard base because it push comes to shove, what we don't want to see is a Republican majority anywhere. So it does work. You will see a change as we get out of the first quarter and into the second quarter.
But you don't see this from the Republicans.
Oh, no, you do.
I never see it from the Republicans because I don't get their mail.
No, I do get their mail.
But it doesn't take this desperate tone like this.
No, but I do. I do. I get them.
Well, I get them too, but they're not in the same numbers.
They're not in the same numbers.
Yeah.
You're right.
I mean, there's this whole thing of John Boehner and Paul Ryan have already begun filling their war chests with shady corporate money. We need you. We need no less than 15,000 renewed members. This is going to be the fight of our life.
That's all true, by the way. There's not one lie in anything they've said there.
Right. It's just that
they are getting a lot of corporate money, and they always will. So does Andrew Cuomo, though. Oh, did I say that already?
A little bit today. A little bit.
And we just call that bringing it full circle. That's good. We're going to take a break. We'll come back. We'll finish up our discussion. We love hearing from you. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this short break.
Support comes from Temple Emmanuel, Kingston, hosting a second night Seder with festive food, klezmer music, and children's activities. Open to the community Tuesday, April 15th at 4:45 p.m. TempleEmmanuelKingston.org. And Bard College Master of Arts in Teaching Program, offering a Master of Arts in Teaching degree and NYS Initial Teaching Certification for grades 7 through 12. Bard.edu/MAT.
Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel. We love having you. We love having your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And we welcome your comments. Also, we have a couple of issues, and I just suddenly looked at the clock and oh my goodness, we only have 7 minutes. So we have
lightning round,
and there's so much we could do.
All right, yeah, I know. So that's right. I'm going to go with Alan. Lightning round. One, the GM.
Wrong.
The GM round. The GM. Let's add the GM story here. Federal regulators decided not to open an inquiry on the ignitions of Chevrolet Cobalts and other cars, even after their own investigators reported in 2007 that they knew of four fatal crashes. U.S. agency knew about GM flaw but did not act.
This is what happens when you have people from the industry in government, and then they go back to the industry, and they go back to government, and they go back to the industry.
Revolving door.
Right.
But especially since, as I've said before, Ralph Nader literally made his reputation with the same company, and the same things. But interesting. It's interesting that there has been this closeness between the Obama administration and some of the banks during the great fallout and the rest. And this is a
and he bailed out the cars.
And either, that's right, either party.
It's costing GM a lot of money to fix it. It's costing them a lot of money in bad public relations. And ultimately, it doesn't matter what the legislators do. There's a court option. People need to take these companies to court over this. That's what's going on. It was ridiculous.
And most of all, don't drive with a key ring on your car key.
Well, that's if your safety depends on the weight of your car,
that's what the problem
is.
The problem is that they drive with keys. You know, you have 25,000 keys, and then they put the key, one of those keys, and it pulls down on the lock. That's one of the reasons that we've had this issue.
If the lock had been made right, that would not have been an issue, nor should it be.
I mean, how many other cars are there on the market that can take keys?
Every other car.
That's insane.
My car, my Prius, does not take a key.
No, it's a button.
As Joe has mentioned.
Right, I have a button.
Right. Yeah, right. So,
so I don't run the risk.
You have a
Subaru,
you have
just
a Subaru,
like you.
Yeah, but mine doesn't have a button, really?
Well, mine's in 2013, and I got, you know, since I drive all over the state all the time,
sure,
I got
well,
the best car I could get.
All right, well, good
for the
you.
Amount of money I had.
Yeah,
yes.
Mine's a 2014, but it doesn't have a.
Oh, yeah, I got the keyless.
Like key.
I got the button. It was great.
All right.
It.
Anything else in
this
the lightning round?
This is not about keys.
Yeah. Electronics.
Anything else?
I was just curious.
Okay, let's go to the next thing in the lightning round. Is
more ships and planes join a search for Jetliner. And you know, the story goes on. It's unbelievable. I have to say, CNN actually chartered their own plane to go out there. I couldn't believe that.
Why not?
What?
That's a good idea. CNN is the big beneficiary of all of this. The more they can keep it going, the
better.
What
are they going to do?
What?
Look,
what are
they the same
do?
Way that gonna... these guys are doing. They're looking for junk in the ocean.
They're going to provide B-roll footage forever.
Yeah.
No,
I thought it was cool.
I think that's what they're doing, yeah. But there was somebody, some major figure today said, one of the politicians said, you know, it may well be that we never find this plane.
I hope we start cleaning up the ocean. What is all this junk out
right,
there?
Right, that's what's amazing.
It's they're finding
garbage
all kinds
junk.
Of garbage. Yeah, they say, oh, that's just garbage. Excuse me.
No, that's just part of a cargo ship that has been there for however long it is. In Malaysia, more than 2 dozen relatives of Chinese passengers of Flight 370 arrived from China on Sunday to press Malaysian officials for more answers about the investigation. The Malaysian government has endured withering criticism from the relatives and friends of Chinese passengers, both in Malaysia and in China, who have accused officials of withholding information about the disappearance of the plane and not doing enough to find it. And it seems to me that a lot more is going to come out about how they knew it. You're right, how the Malaysian government is.
What they knew and when they knew it.
Very beginning, they did hold back some stuff. There's no question about it.
And public relations has been atrocious.
Yeah. So. But holding back stuff, I mean, if you don't know what's going on and it could be terrorism, isn't that
that's
a card you have to play?
That's going to be their argument. That'll be their argument.
Okay, and then finally,
you send them a basket of flowers and fruit. You don't like throw them out of their hotel room zone and say, "Sorry, that's the best we can do." People are going through hell. You kind of support them.
Third and final issue, which I'm not going to get into. What happened to my computer? There we go. Suddenly, we're out of time. But there is a fascinating poll on veterans in the Washington Post. Did you read that?
Yes, amazing.
It's really, really well done. We'll do it tomorrow because I want to do it justice. But it was just an incredible poll about recent veterans and coming back and their feelings on our international relations as well as their treatment and so forth. It was a very in-depth, well done piece, and so we can talk about that
depressing.
Tomorrow. But yeah.
Depressing.
It is a depressing piece. So instead of ending on that, we'll end right now and thank everyone for being with us. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org to keep the conversation going. Alan, Libby, Rosemary, thank you all.
Joe.
Excellent. Check. We'll be back after this short break.